You ever have somebody cut you off in the pattern? Just slide right in front of you without a call, no warning, nothing? Multiply that feeling by about 10,000, and you'll start to understand what happened on the night of March 30th, 2003, at Meigs Field in Chicago. I'm Taildragger, and you're listening to The Hanger on Radio Hanger. Pull up a chair for this one, because it still gets my blood pressure up, and it's been over 20 years. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation Challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. So, Meigs Field, if you never flew into it, I need to paint you the picture because there was nothing else like it in American aviation. Runway 18/3639, 100 feet of asphalt sitting on a man-made peninsula called Northerly Island, right on the shore of Lake Michigan. Downtown Chicago was your traffic pattern. You'd come in from the south over the water, and the skyline would be stacked up on your left like God's own sectional chart come to life. The Sears Tower, the Hancock Building, the whole magnificent mess of it right there at pattern altitude. The field opened in December of 1948, named after a Chicago newspaper publisher and aviation booster who died before he ever saw it finished. For more than 50 years, it was the front door to Chicago for general aviation businessmen, weekend pilots, folks flying in for a Cubs game or a steak dinner. It was the most convenient airport in the city, and it was beloved. Not just used, beloved. The Experimental Aircraft Association held its annual convention there before it moved to Oshkosh. That's how important Meigs was to the fabric of general aviation. At its peak, something like 30,000 operations a year moved through that little lakefront strip. Corporate turboprops, Bonanzas, Cessnas, the occasional twin coming in from downstate. On a summer evening, you could tie down, walk 5 minutes, and be sitting in Grant Park, watching the sun drop behind the skyline. Pilots would fly hundreds of miles out of their way just to log a landing at Meigs because the approach was that spectacular. But there was a man in Chicago who didn't see it that way. Richard M. Daley, mayor of Chicago. Son of the legendary Richard J. Daley, the old boss of the machine. The younger Daley had been mayor since 1989, and he had a vision for Northerly Island that did not include airplanes. He wanted a park, trees, walking paths, maybe a nature preserve, and Meigs Field was sitting right where he wanted to put it. Now, the fight over Meigs had been going on for years. Daley had tried to close it through the political process. He'd gone to the state legislature, he'd made his case publicly, and every time the aviation community pushed back. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, the Illinois Pilots Association, local business leaders, they all fought to keep that runway open. The state legislature actually passed laws protecting the airport. Governor George Ryan extended the lease. There were agreements, compromises, promises made in the way that Chicago politics has always made promises, and for a while it seemed like the good guys had won. The airport stayed open, pilots kept flying in, the skyline kept greeting you on final. Then came the night, March 30th, 2003. It was a Sunday, late. Most of Chicago was asleep. At around midnight, a convoy of trucks and heavy equipment rolled onto Northerly Island. City workers. They had orders, and the orders came from the top. They carved six giant X-shaped gouges into the runway. Think about that for a second. No public hearing, no advance notice, no environmental review, no coordination with the Federal Aviation Administration. In the middle of the night, under cover of darkness, they took bulldozers and backhoes, and they destroyed an active operational airport. Runway. They cut six massive trenches in the shape of an X across that asphalt. Each one deep enough that no airplane was ever going to roll over it again. There were 16 airplanes parked on the field that night. 16 aircraft stranded. Their owners woke up the next morning to find out their airplanes were trapped on an island with no usable runway. Some of those planes sat there for weeks before the city figured out how to get them off, eventually patching together enough surface to let them taxi to a makeshift departure point. The FAA was furious, and the FAA does not get furious easily. They had no warning. Meigs Field was a functioning airport in the National Airspace System. It had instrument approaches. It had a published traffic pattern. It was on every sectional chart covering the Chicago area. You cannot just destroy a runway in the middle of the night without telling the people who manage the airspace above it. There were safety implications. There were flight plans filed with Meigs as a destination. There were pilots who might have been inbound that very night, expecting a runway that no longer existed. Now here's where it gets interesting. When reporters asked Mayor Daley why he did it in the middle of the night, he said it was about security, This was less than 2 years after September 11th, and Daley claimed the lakefront airport was a terrorist threat to the downtown skyline. A small airplane, he said, could take off from Meigs and fly into a building within seconds. The aviation community pointed out correctly that any airplane from any airport could do the same thing, and that destroying Meigs did nothing to change the physics of that problem. The security argument was a fig leaf, and everybody knew it. Daley wanted his park, and he was tired of waiting for the democratic process to give it to him, so he took it. The city of Chicago was eventually fined $33,000 by the FAA. $33,000 by the FAA. $33,000. For destroying an airport. That's less than the cost of an annual inspection on some of the airplanes that were parked there that night. The legal battles dragged on. The feds tried to get the city to pay back airport improvement grants. There were lawsuits, countersuits, negotiations. In the end, the city agreed to improve runway capacity at Gary Chicago International Airport down in Indiana and expand some facilities at other area airports, a consolation prize nobody really wanted. And Northerly Island became a park. It's a nice park, I'll give it that. There's a concert venue out there now. Prairie grass, walking trails. People jog along the lakefront where Cessnas used to roll out after landing. If you didn't know what was there before, you'd never guess. But pilots know. I flew into Meigs twice. The first time was in a Cherokee 140, coming up from Champaign on a VFR day in October. The lake was that deep autumn blue, and the skyline was so close on the crosswind leg that I felt like I could reach out and touch the glass. It was the most beautiful approach I ever flew. You don't forget something like that. You don't land at a place like that and then shrug when somebody takes a bulldozer to it. The second time was in a rented Skyhawk, and it was overcast, maybe 2500 broken, and we came in on the ILS and broke out right over the water with the city lights reflecting off the lake surface. My co-pilot, a young private pilot on his first trip to Chicago, just said one word, wow, that was the right word. What bothered me most about the whole thing wasn't the politics. Politicians do what politicians do, it was the way it was done. In the dark, without warning, without respect for the process or the people who used that airport or the airplanes that were sitting on it. It was the arrogance of it. The assumption that aviation was just a nuisance to be swept away when it became inconvenient.
And there's a lesson in that for all of us who fly. Airports don't protect themselves. Runways don't have a vote. Every little grass strip, every county field with a single runway and a windsock. Every small-town airport that you've ever flown into for a $100 hamburger, they exist because somebody fought for them. Somebody went to a city council meeting. Somebody joined the airport authority board. Somebody wrote a letter or made a phone call or stood up at a public hearing and said, "This place matters because the people who want to close airports and build condos or shopping centers or parks, they don't have to sneak in at midnight. Usually they just wait until nobody's paying attention. And then they hold a vote. And by the time the pilots find out, the zoning has changed and the bulldozers are on order." Meigs was different only in the brazenness of it. But the impulse is the same everywhere. Land is valuable, airports take up space, and the general public doesn't always understand why a little runway matters. It's up to us to tell them. I still pull up the old approach plates sometimes, the ILS runway 36 at Meigs. It's like looking at a photograph of a friend who's gone. The airport identifier was CGX, Charlie Golf X-ray, you won't find it on a sectional anymore, you won't find it on 4Flight. It's just a green space on a satellite image now, with a concert stage where the threshold used to be. 16 airplanes stranded in the dark, 6 X's carved into the only runway, and a mayor who decided that the democratic process was taking too long. That story was pulled together from the AOPA's archives, the Chicago Tribune's reporting at the time, and a few personal memories that won't quit. You can find more at RadioHangar.com. Keep fighting for your local airport, folks, because somewhere there's always a bulldozer with your runway's name on it. This is Taildragger. See you next time.